Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, our website is kptz.org. The website is multifaceted. For example, you can listen to many things, including the schedule, biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can listen to today's show, and you can also sample some of our earlier shows, which are online as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show, as well as some of the earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are those people waving protest signs out in front of Wells Fargo Bank? Who is that guy pedaling his bike down Hastings, dragging some sort of cart behind him? The cart is clearly designed for a kid, but he has a dog in it. Why? What's up with that? And what about that woman in QFC meticulously sorting through the oranges? They can't all be different. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with the people who make up the eclectic mix around these parts. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people. Your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today, my guest is Jim Emery, one of the many entrepreneurs who have set up their own businesses in town. Jim has a consulting company called Elaka Consulting. His clients are people or businesses in need of help with Macintosh computers. He's also the president of a vibrant group called PT Slugs. I will let him explain about the slugs a little bit later in the show. But let's start off with a little background. Jim, are you a Port Townsend native?
Hi, Marianne. I'm not a Port Townsend native. I was born in Rockford, Illinois.
And where is that?
That is about an hour and a half northwest of Chicago. It's the second biggest city in Illinois, but a lot of people consider it almost a suburb of Chicago at this point.
Did you go to high school there?
I did. I went to high school in Rockford.
I see. Now, high school kids are notorious for typecasting their peers. Whether they really are in these groups or not in these groups, their peers think they are. So what do you think the other high school kids would classify you as?
I probably would have been classified as a nerd, possibly even a computer nerd.
So you were playing with computers even from a young age.
I was.
That's fun. Were your parents into computers too?
They weren't. My mom was a teacher, and so around that time was when computers were first starting to make inroads into schools. And I remember some computers being in schools.
Okay. So when you were in high school, were you very focused? Did you know this is exactly what I want to do when I grow up?
Absolutely not. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I grew up.
What did you do right after high school graduation?
Well, after I graduated from high school, I went to college in Appleton, Wisconsin, where I studied Russian.
How did you come up with that decision?
I had the opportunity my senior year in high school to go to Russia. And at the time, in the early to mid 80s, Russia was the biggest, scariest thing around.
Right.
And I was fascinated by what this big, scary thing was. And so in college, I had an opportunity to study Russian and really enjoyed it.
So what stands out to you in your mind from that very first trip to Russia? What was one overwhelming impression?
I think one of the impressions was it really wasn't that different from how we lived. I mean, it was Russia. It was the Soviet Union, but they were people like us.
One of my brothers went to Russia also as a student. And when he came back, he showed me a little icon that somebody had wanted his jeans, traded him his Levi's for this icon, which was pretty amazing.
So I recently had the opportunity to get together with a friend from high school who went on that trip, and we were reminiscing. And he said, do you remember when we walked out of the hotel wearing three pairs of jeans each because you would go sell them? And I did.
I see. So he wasn't unique in the jeans.
No, not at all.
Okay. All right. So did you graduate with a degree in Russian?
I did. I graduated with a BA in Russian linguistics.
And then what?
And then I spent a couple of years trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. and eventually decided that grad school in Russian political science or Russian studies sounded interesting. And that's how I got out here to University of Washington, the Jackson School of International Studies.
Did you have in mind then what you were going to do when you got that degree?
Again, not precisely. I met some folks in Seattle who ran a tour company that specialized in tours to the former Soviet Union, and that was something that I had had some experience with.
So did you travel back there a lot?
Yeah, I spent a couple summers in VW buses driving around Eastern Europe and Russia for the summer as part of a college program. And then when I worked out in Seattle, I would travel a couple times a year to various places.
Wow. And do you speak Russian?
Yes, I did. I haven't spoken in probably 8-9 years, and yeah. So I'm pretty rusty. But
yeah, but at the time you were fluent enough to get your group around.
Fluent enough is a good way to put it, yes.
And the groups that you led, were these large groups or small groups?
I think they're probably generally considered small groups. For most of the trips that we did, you know, 5 to 10 people was the group size. Some larger groups, but the company tended to focus on smaller group tours.
Well, that's, I think, better for the experience to get to know it better. And how long would each of the trips last, roughly?
They varied anywhere from a week to, I think the longest was probably 3 weeks.
How long were you doing that?
I did that for approximately 12 years, 12 or 13 years, from the time I finished grad school until my daughter was born.
You mentioned earlier that as a kid you were interested in computers, and now you're in the computer business. But you're talking about guiding tours to Russia. Where's the thread go here?
I know it's a strange mix, and sometimes a hard thread to follow. When I started working at this company, there were 3 of us and 1 computer, and when I finished at this company, there were probably 15 people and over a dozen computers. And in the course of that development, I had been the person that was most interested in managing the computers and taking care of the computers. So after my daughter was born, I needed to find a job that gave me some more flexibility of schedule.
Right.
And I had a friend who was doing computer consulting in Seattle, and he offered to show me the ropes and show me how he did it. And that's kind of how I got started.
So you started consulting in Seattle first.
In Seattle, correct.
All right. Now, tell me about the name of your company. What does it stand for?
The name Elaka is the Chinook word for sea otter. For some reason, I didn't like the idea of Emory Consulting, so I was trying to find a name that would be more interesting. And I chose one that was hard to pronounce and difficult to spell. But, yes. But I still like it. I like sea otters. I like the name.
Yeah. Well, it's a cool name. A little hard to pronounce. A great name. So you started consulting in Seattle. You mentioned that you had a daughter around the time you started consulting. And did you stay in Seattle for then a while?
When my first daughter was 6 months old, we moved to New Zealand for a year.
Oh, that's cool.
Which was fun. Quite an experience.
Why did you end up in New Zealand?
In part because we could. My wife was finishing up residency, and New Zealand was in need of doctors. And so they have a program where it's fairly easy to go down there and work for some period of time as a doctor. And we could. So we went to New Zealand. It was a great year.
Yeah,
it was a really fun year.
It would be a real adventure. Yeah. So I guess if your wife was a doctor, she was working sort of long hours, leaving you with the baby.
Hence the need for me to have a flexible schedule.
Yes, I can see that. An infant is pretty easy to take around in one sense, pretty easy to take around, portable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And did you explore New Zealand a lot?
We did. My daughter and I would explore all over the place. We were just north of Wellington, and so we would often go into Wellington and wander around. And I would actually take her fly fishing on occasion, which was fun. She was small enough to sit in a backpack and seem not too bored. So that was great. And then we spent a lot of weekends just driving around to various places.
That's cool. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on your radio dial. The show is called Our Town, and I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today is Jim Emery of the computer consulting company Elaka Consulting. He's also the president of PT Slugs, a computer group with an intriguing name and pedigree. But right now, we're just finishing talking about the year he spent in New Zealand, where he took his baby daughter fly fishing and other things. Did you do any consulting down there?
I didn't, actually. I really didn't start doing consulting until I came back from New Zealand.
Okay. Did you immediately come to Port Townsend when you came back from New Zealand?
No. My wife was finishing her training in Seattle, and she said that she wanted to get out of Seattle. Where did I want to live? And I said, Port Townsend.
Why? Why?
Well, I think I had been to Port Townsend with the West Coast Sea Kayak Symposium for several years in a row. And so I had this image of this little Victorian town on the water with lots of people who went sea kayaking and hiking and climbing and, you know, nestled right next to the Olympic Mountains, which I loved.
Huh. And what year was that?
That was about 7 years ago. I think we moved on January 1st. Let's see, about maybe 2010.
And your wife is a doctor with Jefferson Healthcare?
She is. She's a family practice doctor at Jefferson Healthcare.
Okay. And after you arrived here, that's when you really started consulting?
Yeah, I'd consulted for a little bit in Seattle. We still lived in Seattle for about 6 months while she finished training. When we moved to Bellingham, I was consulting in Bellingham and then just continued when I came to Port Townsend.
Okay, so tell me about PT Slugs. First of all, what does the name stand for?
So the name stands for the Port Townsend Seriously Laid-Back User Group, which is nice. Sometimes computers can be intimidating, and so it's nice to have a group that is not intimidating when you want to come learn about your computer.
And how long has the club been around?
Well, it's funny. We were trying to find this out, and the person that I know who has been with the club longest said that he believes the club was started in the mid to late 80s. His involvement started in about the early 90s, and I think there were about 6 members, and the club would meet kind of whenever they felt like it. So in the mid-90s, they began meeting on a regular basis and kind of became what they are today.
Roughly how many members are there?
Got about 350 people. Those aren't all active members.
Right, of course.
I want to say the membership is between 100 and 150.
It meets monthly, right?
It meets monthly. Our meetings tend not to be that big.
Yeah.
Probably between 20 and 30.
And how do you decide what you're doing at each monthly meeting?
Well, partly we try to listen to what the members are asking and what they're interested in and what they want to learn. That sometimes is difficult because you don't always know what you don't know. And so there's a couple other people on the board of directors of PT Slug and I that get together and bounce ideas around and try to come up with ideas that we think will be interesting.
Computers change so rapidly. I've always wondered, people like you and your other, you know, senior people there, do you keep up with every new operating system and every twitch of, you know, the computer world?
I try to, especially with operating system issues. Part of my business is that I'm certified with Apple. I'm part of the Apple Consultants Network, and you're required to pass a certification exam on the current operating system or one operating system removed from the current one. So I try to keep up on the current operating system. On the internet, there's so much hype about anything that happens that I don't tend to pay attention to the rumors, what Apple's going to do next with the iPhone 8, but rather concentrate on things that
actually
as
exist.
They are. Yes.
This certification for the Apple Consulting Network, do you have any idea how many people would be part of it nationwide?
There's a website, consultants.apple.com, where you can find members of the Apple Consultants Network.
Well, that's interesting. Would have never thought of that.
Yeah. And I know there's quite a few in Seattle, but nationwide, I really don't have a good sense of the numbers.
Well, now here's the thing. As an individual using computers, it seems like every other week, something pops up and it says, you need to update now. And sometimes I wonder, do I really need to update again?
There are definitely good reasons to update. I'm not always a fan of updating just for the sake of updating. So with an operating system update, if there's a compelling reason to update, then maybe it's worth doing.
How do you know if it's...
Hopefully you come to PT Slug and you ask us, you know, what's everyone's experience been? A lot of the updates from Apple tend to be fairly safe because they're coming from Apple. Well, you hope they're safe.
Recently, I've been reading and hearing a lot about computer scams. Can mere mortals protect yourselves from them?
I've known several people who have gotten taken in by scams. The scammers are good. There's a couple things to think about. We at PT Slug, we had a gentleman a couple years ago from Bangor who was a security expert at Bangor, and he came to talk to us about computer security. And he spent the entire meeting scaring everybody to death, saying, listen, if somebody really wants to get into your computer and your data, you can't stop.
Wow.
But what he said was the best defense you have in computer security is using common sense. If you get an email that says, we're going to give you $20,000 if you just give us some money, that's not probably realistic. What I've seen a lot recently is you'll be browsing the web and a window will pop up saying your computer is infected. You need to call this number immediately and we'll help you get your computer uninfected. And oftentimes those websites can look like a legitimate Microsoft website or a legitimate Apple website. But your computer is never going to ask you to call a number.
If something like that pops up on your screen, what should you do?
If it's especially in a web browser, quit the web browser right away. And then you can restart the web browser. In some cases, that screen will pop up again. I know in the case of a Macintosh, if you hold down the shift key while you're reopening your web browser, it will not open the windows that were open before. And so you'll get rid of that warning.
What about totally shutting down your computer? Would that help?
Sure, that's a great thing to do, is just shut it down or restart it.
Get rid of it.
But the biggest thing to remember is that your computer is never, ever going to pop up a number or a window that says, call this number and pay them money. You know, if you have concerns, there are things you can do where you've gone out and searched for some virus software or some help rather than responding to a window popping up.
I saw something on TV a couple of weeks ago that astounded me. And basically, this is one of these, you know, consumer alert kind of thing. And it showed how a guy from the network could get into people's cameras. And the family was cooperating with this. And the two teenage girls were upstairs in their bedroom and they had a computer in there. They weren't using it. And somehow he was able to spy on them, to turn on the camera. And the TV reporter was downstairs with the parents and everyone was really shocked that this could happen. How did that happen?
In terms of the mechanics of how one hacks into the computer, I am not I'm not a hacker and don't know how you hack into a computer like that.
It was pretty scary.
It is scary, and especially if you have small children or anybody, you don't want your camera.
I put a piece of tape over my camera.
Lots of people do pieces of tape where you see post-it notes over the camera on a computer. There are pieces of software, too, that will tell you if your camera is being accessed. And so there are some software things you can do to try to prevent that from happening. The piece of tape is certainly going to be the easiest and best answer. I mean, it will definitely work in all situations.
Simple firm.
I also think that those things at times are overblown.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think they were looking for ratings kind of thing, but it was pretty astonishing.
And this is one of the things that comes up frequently at PT Slug is security issues. How can I make sure that these things aren't happening to me? And so we seem to talk about it on a pretty regular basis.
It's difficult. I mean, one time I was in a hotel and they have Wi-Fi. And I was in my room. I wasn't in the public space. And I went online. And anyway, the gist of it is somehow they got my stuff. And someone sent something to all my contacts. Fortunately, one of my contacts was someone fairly sophisticated with computers who immediately got in touch with me and said, did you send this?
Yeah. Yeah, public Wi-Fi networks can be a risky place. So certainly you don't want to do any banking or things that might be risky in a public Wi-Fi network.
What about giving your credit card numbers in a public Wi-Fi?
I wouldn't give my credit card number either. You know, I've been using services like PayPal, and there are other services similar to PayPal quite a bit for online purchases because they don't actually have to send your credit card number over a network when you purchase something.
Yeah, I'm increasingly doing that. PayPal just sends your credit card ending in, and they give you four last numbers.
Exactly. And there's other services, Apple Pay, and I'm sure others that I'm not thinking of right now that do the same thing.
In terms of your consulting career here, what are the main issues that you find your clients? We're obviously talking about security, and that must be one thing your clients are interested in. But what are some of the other things?
Well, the biggest one is my computer is slow. My computer doesn't run quickly anymore, or it doesn't run the way it did when I first bought it. And that's a tricky one. There's a variety of things you can address. Unfortunately, there's no one button you can come in and press and suddenly restore the computer to how it was when it was new. There's also quite a few networking issues. I'm not able to get my email. I'm not able to connect to the internet. The computer now is almost hard to imagine without a network connection. The internet is such a part of what we do with computers and technology that those issues crop up quite a bit. And the other one is security issues. I mean, I get calls from clients that say, got this thing saying I need to call somebody and pay them money right away.
What was the scariest question or issue that one of your clients came up with?
The scariest questions for me are always data loss, unrecoverable data loss. You know, my hard drive has died and I didn't have a backup and I've got my grandkids' pictures on here. Because those are the ones that always hit home. Fortunately, and that's another thing that we've talked about at PT Slug quite a bit, is backing up your data, backing up your computers. Fortunately, it doesn't happen often that things are completely unrecoverable.
I have a friend who their house was burglarized. When the thieves took their computer, they had an external backup sitting right on the desk. They took that too.
Yeah, and then your backup does no good. If a thief has walked off with your backup,
no.
Backing up your computer can be this rabbit hole of paranoia if you go too far. But, you know, as you just described, having a local backup of your computer is great, but not if someone comes in and takes it. We often recommend having a couple different backups, one of which is an offsite backup. You may have heard, you know, backing up to the cloud. But if it's not backing up to the cloud, some people will take a hard drive, make a copy of their computer, and then carry it offsite, put it in a safe deposit box, put it in their office.
Mm-hmm. What do you do personally?
So I have a local backup that I use, and then I use a cloud backup service, and there's quite a few out there that all seem to work pretty well. And I've actually had to use that before, not for my computer, but for a relative's computer. The issue we have with that is that you have a bunch of data backed up into the cloud and you go to restore it and you think, this is great, I'm going to be set. And then you start it and it says, this is going to take 23 days. we don't always have the fastest of internet speeds here in Port Townsend, so that can be a challenge.
Wow. Now, you have two daughters now, right?
That's correct.
And how old are they?
They are 11 and 8.
So let's talk a little bit about children's use of computers. You know, you're an expert. What do you advise and what do you do with your daughters?
It's tricky, especially since they see me on a computer quite often. We try to limit the amount of screen time the kids have. They have, I think, a half hour of time when they can go to sites, PBS Kids, things like that, sites to look at kind of fun stuff. But we also have some parental controls on the computer for them to go to sites related to school. And those they can go to with a little bit less time restrictions, but they're limited to things that are school related. There are parental controls and things that you can set on a computer to help with that. My experience has been that however you try to limit your kids' access to the computer, they're going to find a way around it. And so I think the biggest thing is just setting expectations with them and saying, here's what we'd like you guys to do.
Do you actually warn them about specific sites or types of sites?
We have, yeah. I mean, they it's pretty rare that they get into places that they shouldn't, but it's happened on occasion, and fortunately not anything horrible, but enough that we sat down and said, listen, this is why you need to be careful when you're out there on the internet, because there's all kinds of things out there.
Yeah, your kids are still pretty young. They haven't really hit the dreaded teenage years yet.
Yeah, and it's a challenge, I mean, especially with cell phones and things like that.
Yeah. Now, do your daughters have cell phones?
My oldest daughter does have a cell phone. She doesn't use it very much. We got it because she wanted to start biking to school, and we wanted to have a way of just making sure she got to school, and that when she left school, we knew she had left school.
So does she phone you? Is that how it works?
No, she's got an old iPhone, and there's an application called Find My Friends that you can use, and you can set it to, in our case, it's when she arrives at school, I get a little message that says, you know, your daughter has arrived at school.
And so she doesn't actually have to do anything.
She doesn't have to do anything.
So she doesn't have to think about it.
Right. I'm not sitting there watching her every move and looking where she's going.
Yeah, but you want to know that she gets there safely. Does she initiate calls as well?
She doesn't really. She doesn't use it in that way. She sends some text messages to some friends that, you know, that we know. But I can see that it's going to be a slippery slope because, you know, as you start using it, you find more and more things you want to use it for. And
texting is, I think, the preferred mode of communication of that generation.
I think you're right.
I wonder how they talk to each other.
In person?
Yeah.
having a face-to-face conversation?
Yeah. What schools do your kids go to?
My oldest daughter goes to Blue Heron, and my youngest daughter is at Grant Street.
My understanding is the schools around here are pretty good.
They are, and I think they're facing challenges, too, in terms of how to integrate computer systems.
Do the classrooms here have computers in them?
The short answer is no. I mean, I think most of the classrooms will have a computer in them that tends to get used by the teacher.
Right.
And then they have, I believe they have carts of Chromebooks, and I know Grant Street has iPads that they can use. So there are some iPads in each of the classes at Grant Street, and they can bring those together and have enough for an entire class or just ones for each class.
I read an article recently about children who do not have computers in their homes are really at a disadvantage these days.
Yeah, if you think about how much of our lives are you know, take place through a computer, paying bills, registering for school, I mean, all these things that we in the past have done on pen and paper and are now done through the computer. If you don't have a computer, those things are harder. And if you're not used to being able to use a computer, I can see how that can be a big disadvantage.
Yeah, I would think particularly when kids get high school and they have to do papers or whatever, if they don't have access to the kind of research that other kids could do easily. It could be a real disadvantage for them.
Yeah.
Let's skip back to PT Slugs for a little bit here. You say there's a mailing list of over 300 people, but maybe 100 more active and maybe meetings, 20, 30 people. Do you also run classes?
We do. We've run different kinds of classes over the course of the last couple of years. Right now, we're doing a class on Friday afternoon. I think it's the last Friday of the month. There is a calendar on the PT Slug website where people can go and find these things.
Okay. And what's the website again?
PT Slug. So PTSLUG.org.
Okay.
And there's a calendar there. Right now, we're running kind of a introductory class on Friday afternoons. And that's a good opportunity for people to be able to get more hands-on training than we're able to do in the general meetings. Those have been very popular.
Can anyone attend?
Because we try to do more hands-on work, we try to limit the attendance so that we don't have too many people. And we give preference to people that are members of PT Slug. But if there are spaces available, anyone can attend. the meet.
But you have to register, I presume.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And if someone wanted to join PT Slug, could they join by going to the website?
They can. Yeah, they can just go to the website and join. And anybody is welcome to come to our general meetings just to see what it's all about and see if it's something that they would be interested in.
And those would be published on your website.
Those
are
on the website. I think they're also announced on KPTZ and some other places.
Yes, yes. It's the second Thursday of the month.
That's right, second Thursday of the month. And they alternate between the Tri-Area Community Center down in Chimicum and the Port Townsend Community Center here in Port Townsend.
And if I had a burning computer question, could I raise my hand in that meeting?
Oh, you certainly can. Yes. In fact, we encourage you to come and raise your hand. You know, you'll also, if you go to the PT Slug website, you'll find some folks that are willing to help. If you have a burning question that's not at one of our meetings, you'll find some people that have volunteered to be resources for folks that have questions as well. So I think that for some people, face-to-face is a more effective way to learn, and we can help provide that, just some in-person instruction and a group setting of people who also have similar questions.
So, Jim, we're running short of time here, but I wanted to ask you just sort of in closing, two things. One, what do you do when you're not doing computer stuff?
I seem to be driving back and forth to dance quite a bit, soccer, piano lessons. I spend a lot of time driving my kids back and forth to various things in Port Townsend. When I'm not doing that, I like to get out and hike and sea kayak and do things like that.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the Sea Kayak Symposium. Is that still running?
It's not, unfortunately. It's funny. It actually ended the year I moved here, which was poor timing.
Wow. So you like the water, obviously.
I do.
What about the mountains?
Oh, I love the mountains, too. In fact, I was just remembering this, that on my first trip to Washington State, one of the first places I went to was the Elwha River. I remember driving from Seattle across to the Elwha and the Olympics, because that was something that I knew about, and I was just fascinated by it. So I love the Olympics in this corner of the state.
And so what do you like best about Port Townsend?
You know, Port Townsend is a very engaged community, and there's a lot going on in a town of this size. And I think that's one of the things I appreciate is just the vitality of the community in Port Townsend.
Okay. Well, now we're really out of time. I want to thank you for being a guest on the show. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Behind the window, where you can't see him, is our talented engineer, John McPherson. He's the man responsible for making me and my guests sound so good week after week. Thank you, John. I also want to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and particularly I want to thank my guest today, Jim Emery, who's the president of PT Slugs for all you Mac users. And for all of you out there in Radioland, keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.